Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by The Last Word on Sports, episode number 90. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a wonderful week. Hope you all are excited for the holiday week upcoming. We're in week 11 of the NFL season. We're going to pick them. We're going to talk about week 10. We're going to talk big picture. We're going to pick a little bit of the week 12 games that will be on Thanksgiving Day. Wish you the best of luck. Hope everybody's staying happy and healthy. Whatever Thanksgiving plans you may have, whether you're allowed to have Thanksgiving plans or not in your state, that's between you and everyone inside your house. Either way, we're going to start this episode like we start almost every other episode with my standout seven. We're going to start standout seven the way we usually do, just two this week in the number one slot. 1A, bigger story, the Cardinals' victory over the Buffalo Bills, or the Baltimore Ravens' loss to the New England Patriots. Usually, we don't go win-loss. Usually, we go loss-loss or win-win. But the interesting thing is here, and the reason I wanted to get into it, is the Arizona Cardinals played a pretty fantastic game against Buffalo, and I'm going to be blunt with you, barring a miracle play here, or a tremendous play, probably the best catch you're going to see in the career of tremendous wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, who, as we said, look, you can't praise this deal enough, but whatever. Aside from that, they lost this game. Their defense let them down. Josh Allen took his team down the field. Two turnovers in this one for Josh through the air, which is not good in a game where, you know, and I'm going to be blunt with you here. These are two teams that are contenders. They're probably playoff teams. But at the same time, it's a situation where they're not exactly on the tip of the tongue of the common NFL fan. And I found myself watching this game thinking, you know, if this somehow wound up a Super Bowl, this would be pretty darn entertaining. You know, it genuinely would have been a pretty solid game, and it was a pretty solid game in this one. It was very entertaining. I applaud the NFL for the late slate they had last week. It doesn't always have to be early afternoon heavy, because we had some baller matchups in the late window, as we usually do. 32-30, Cardinals win this one. The bigger story, as we said. So, it's going to be the Ravens' loss. Cardinals showed up big. And just to put a bow on it, I'm comparing these games because for all intents and purposes, prior to the Hail Mary, the Cardinals had lost this game. The bigger story is the Ravens lost because the Ravens are chasing an undefeated Pittsburgh team. They needed to win to keep it interesting. You know, they could still win the division, you never know, but they're three out at this point. On top of the fact that they're playing Pittsburgh short rest after this week. They're playing them on Thanksgiving. And Pittsburgh is playing a snoozer this week, easy trap game. 100% trap game in Jacksonville. But if Baltimore had won and stayed alive and then went on to win this week, let's see, the Baltimore Ravens are taking on the Tennessee Titans, which is no walk in the park, and we'll get into that in the pick'em portion, as per usual. If they were able to win this past game and the game tomorrow, they would have walked into a situation where if they win on Thanksgiving, they're one out and they just need a little bit of help. Right now, they kind of need a tremendous amount of help. Three out with seven to play, you know? And the reason I'm bringing this up is this team, this Baltimore squad has just not been the same. Now, obviously, you can say the record and things like that, and they've had some tough ones here. You take a look, they lose this one in New England, which is a brain blast to take in. They lost to Pittsburgh at home, which is something else, and their only other loss coming to the hands of the defending champions. There's no shame in those first two losses, but you lose a game to the New England Patriots, and, you know, you give up 118 passing yards, or rather, when you add it all together, 142, including a Jacoby Myers wide receiver pass touchdown, which is something that we've talked about last year, but, you know, clearly is something in the Josh McDaniels playbook he is comfortable using early and often. Usually with Edelman or any of the boys. He had Sanu in there at one point just to do it. The trick pass is a significant chunk of the trickeration they do here. And, you know, Damian Harris, who for some reason came out of nowhere. I don't really know too much about him, but Damian Harris has shown some flashes of, hold on, this guy might be the best back on this team. This is a team with Sony Michel, who I think is pretty darn talented. Rex Burkhead, who I don't think is super talented, but continues to be productive whenever they chunk him out there. I don't know. It's a weird one for me. It's a very odd game, and I think I might just have to chalk it up to being a trap game here. Because they had the Titans coming up, and then they're already looking ahead to Thanksgiving. But this is a team coached by Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, that you're expecting to be well-coached, you're expecting to be disciplined, you're expecting a lot of things out of them that, for some reason, it's just not... It wasn't there this past week. Is Lamar Jackson having an awful year? No. Under 200 passing yards a game, it is what it is. 14 touchdowns to 5 picks, nothing insane. Obviously, two of those interceptions coming in the loss to Pittsburgh, which is big. You know, nothing really impressive coming out of him for my money in the game against Kansas City, the two biggest tests they've had, and they've failed both of them. Obviously, played pretty well in their win over Indy, but 170 passing yards, 58 rushing yards, it doesn't knock your socks off, if we're being completely and brutally honest. You know, last season he ran for 1,206 yards. This year he's at about 500. He's pacing a little lower. It is what it is. Touchdown, 7 last year, 3 this year. Pacing a little lower. It is what it is. 6 fumbles already this year. 9 last year. We'll see how that one paces through. The bottom line is, Baltimore came into this season with many people thinking it would be a big time for Lamar Jackson to take that next step. Lamar Jackson to really, I don't know, kind of... not pull it together per se, but really develop into the Russell Wilson-esque, even Cam Newton-esque guy winging the ball. But the bottom line is, we saw it in college, and look, I was a fan of him in college. I would look, New York born and bred. I thought the Giants would be getting a steal at the end of the first round that year. He lollipops that deep ball a little bit, doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, but he's a decent passer. I would say he's an above average passer in the NFL. But there just seems to be something the defenses have figured out about them. You compare that, on the other hand, to the other team we're talking about, the Arizona Cardinals, where Kyler Murray is explosive, scrambling seemingly whenever he wants to be. Now, is Lamar Jackson suffering from a little bit of Robert Griffin syndrome, where he doesn't want to run as much? I'm not sure. Are they scheming better around his tendencies? I think that might be the case, and I think when you combine that with the fact that reasonably, their passing attack has not developed into one of the better passing attacks in the league. They're not, you know, the Jaguars, but they're at the same time not Seattle. They're not Green Bay, things like that. No one thought they would be, but the steps forward just haven't really been there, on top of the fact that, you know, one of their biggest wide receiver threats, Marquise Brown, deep threat. Deep threat's very inconsistent. Very hard to show up week in, week out when your biggest thing is running fly routes, right? Running deep posts, running a wide receiver screen and breaking loose, things like that. It's intriguing to me to see how this playoff run goes for them. I do think that they're a team that can run it, and they can usually play defense, and when you run into teams like that in the postseason, the game could be over before you know it. So I am intrigued, like I said, to say the least. Impressed by the Cardinals. With that win, though, I think, honestly, that was a loss. For all intents and purposes, it's a win in the books, but I'm sure the coaching staff came in and said, hey, guys, we pretty much lost that game. Next, bigger story, the Browns' meaningless win. Not meaningless at this point in the season, but for the Texans it was, or the Dolphins' meaningless win. Once again, not meaningless at this point in the season and in the long run. Let's start with the former. The Cleveland Browns... up 3-0 for three quarters, and then they trade touchdowns in the fourth. I am not very impressed by anything the Texans are putting together, so this really doesn't mean too much to me, though. The running game with Nick Chubb back out there for the Cleveland Browns looked dynamic. 230 yards between him and Kareem Hunt on 38 carries. That is dynamic. That is winning football when it comes to postseasons and things like that. Baker Mayfield didn't do too much for me. Leading receiver in the game was Rashard Higgins. It is what it is. Their defense played quite well. As I said, we've talked this ad nauseum. I don't like the way the Texans have constructed their receiving core and their offense as a whole. Obviously, there's a reason they're 2-7. It is what it is. So, I would say, in a normal circumstance, the Browns finding a way to not Browns it up is a big story. But in this case, I would say the bigger story is actually Miami. A team that went up early... And they just held their lead. Look, Tua Tagovailoa has not done too much to realistically impress me. I was impressed by the back for the Dolphins, Ahmed. And he came out of nowhere. That's the way the broadcast team was pronouncing it. I thought it was Ahmed at first, but I'll go with it. Ahmed played pretty darn well. 4 yards a carry for them. Running the ball hard. But Tua hasn't really had the opportunity to impress me. I'll be blunt with you. No crazy throws for my money. No crazy shows of mobility. Obviously, that's not his thing, but you never know. Herbert didn't have a phenomenal game, but 20-32, two touchdowns and a pick. If that's your worst game as a rookie, then you're a pretty good rookie. Keenan Allen, we've talked about this previously. It's another one of those games where, you know, close game, lose by 8, down 2 touchdowns early, going to have to wing it. And my star wideout, just feel like he needs to have more of an impact than that. Same could be said of Mike Williams, to be honest. Nice little comeback game, revenge game for Kalen Ballage, who was a Dolphin, who I thought ran the ball hard for them, but never worked out. Maybe he'll get back in there with Kelly and Jackson and Eckler when he gets back out there and give him a little bit of a stable. But this is a lost season, obviously, for the Chargers. They weren't intending on contending or anything like that. So I'd say the bigger story is the Dolphins, because they did win and they're still staying alive. But on the other hand, the Browns not Brownsing it up is always news. Number two in standout seven. It's really number one, because number one is a giveaway every week. Let's talk about this Drew Brees injury. Drew Brees goes down, multiple rib fractures on both sides of his chest, and a collapsed lung on the right side, according to ESPN's Ed Werder. CBS confirming the broken ribs, and they're saying he will be sidelined more than 1 week. So, let's talk about the New Orleans Saints, eh? So, as we sit right now, right meow, the New Orleans Saints are in first place by a half game. They're 7-2. The Bucs are 7-3, right on their heels. They're being led by a Hall of Fame quarterback who's finding his footing in a new offense, gaining chemistry with his boys. The Saints won a pretty big game here. You know, it's the backups of San Francisco, but they're up 10. They're up 7.5. Excuse me. And you got to go to your backup quarterback. Jameis Winston came in and was adequate. He did not turn the ball over through the air. Taysom Hill came in, ran the ball a little bit, just kind of mixing it up. They're going forward, it appears, this week at least, with Taysom Hill in the quarterback position. And we'll talk about them and that game in more depth later. But let's just preview the remainder of the season here. They have one more game to play than the Buccaneers. So, they play the Falcons at home this week. All right, they're at Denver, snoozer. They got the Falcons again, moderate snooze. They're in Philly, snooze. Then they have the Chiefs in New Orleans. Then they play the Vikings. Then they play the Panthers. Panthers competitive. Philly might be playing for something. Falcons trying to play spoiler. Broncos are a snoozer. Vikings are a snoozer. Kansas City is a huge one. So if we look at this team right now, put it this way. Even if they had Drew Brees, I figure they're going to suffer at least one loss in here, if not two. Potentially if we get crazy, three. So, figure they end the year at worst 11-5, right? At worst, worst, worst. Projection, if Drew comes back, depending on the way things go, let's call it 12-4. Let's take a look at Tampa. Tampa's got the Rams on Monday Night Football this week. Tough one. Then they've got Kansas City. Tough one. Vikings snoozer. Two Falcons snoozers. And between those Falcons snoozers, an intriguing game post-Christmas on December the 27th in Detroit, which is listed as TBD time, which is intriguing to me. So we could run into a situation where both of these teams go 12-4, and the head-to-head is 2-0 New Orleans, with a combined score in those games, mind you, of 72-26, and won both games by two scores. Am I concerned in the long run about New Orleans? Less than you would think, but when I say long run, here's what really concerns me. My concern in the long run comes into Drew Brees. There were murmurings, and obviously, and there were people shouting it from the rooftops, that Drew Brees looked washed, right? The arm strength was going. He was dinking and dunking. That's not what Drew Brees does. Like, all of a sudden, people realize that Drew Brees is a short to intermediate passer who sprinkles in those deep balls that we see on SportsCenter. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not winging it. He's not Josh Allen. He is Brady-esque. Can you succeed being Brady-esque? Yes, you can. However, some of the skill position talent on his team is built for those shot plays and less built for those intermediates. For example, Jared Cook is a pretty good option, which was available to him for the dinking and dunking, and he's still around, obviously. It's a good option where they can factor him in more, but how much is Jared going to give you? Is he Jared of old, right? How much is Mike Thomas going to be able to give you? Because he's been battling these injuries on and off, along with the 1 week where he was sat because of the altercation of practice. And it's shaking my confidence in this team as an NFC contender. But, and the but is rather large, you can never count out the historical factor or the win it for the Gipper kind of factor. If this injury is serious, which it appears to be, obviously, it's a rib injury, lungs being involved, who's to say this can't be Drew Brees' final playoff run? Who's to say this can't be the Peyton Manning on no legs, getting carried by his defense, and finding a way to bring home that second trophy and walking into the sunset? Now, would Drew Brees walk away? I don't know. We're looking at a season, and we look at this, and look, we like to look at certain things in a vacuum, but you can't ignore it. Drew Brees getting older. Drew Brees coming off an offseason where he made a political statement for what felt like the first time ever, and was immediately shouted down, and then changed his tune a little bit, you know what I mean, about kneeling and things like that during the national anthem. And we don't talk about that on this show because I'm sure you hear it everywhere else. And quite honestly, this is a football show. And while it involves football, it's not what we're here to discuss. But as I said, you can't view everything in a vacuum. So that that might affect his interactions with his teammates. That might affect his perception of the way the league views him, the way that commentators view him, the way that certain people involved view him and the things that he has to do. Combined that with the injuries, combined that with ripping him and saying, you know, oh, he looks old, he looks washed, he looks this, he looks that, could this be the last one? Now, the rivaling history in winning for the Gipper is Tom Brady in Tampa trying to show that he was more than just him and Belichick. Now, Tom seems to have a little bit more longevity. I highly doubt this is Tom's one-year wonder. He's not retiring if he wins at all. Lord knows that. He's got enough rings. He's not playing just for another one. He's playing for another one, another one, another one, another one. And of course, to try and go out as the greatest quarterback of all time, break all the records, do all that, yada, yada, yada. Like he's playing connected franchise mode in Madden football. Till you're the best in everything, then you call it and you're bored and you go play something else. The intriguing thing from that aspect, the Tom Brady aspect, is they would be the home team in the Super Bowl, which, to my knowledge, has never happened, I believe. And if he were to win it, that would be just another stone in the gauntlet for Tom Brady. And it would truly be, arguably, the most legendary career in any sport. And you can stretch that. Look, I'm not an expert on every sport. We can talk Michael Jordan. We can talk Bill Russell. We can talk LeBron James. We can go to baseball and talk Yogi Berra. We could talk Derek Jeter. We could talk all these guys that have won all these rings. Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Barry Bonds. We can go to golf and talk Jack Nicklaus versus Tiger Woods versus... And look. The fact of the matter is he'd be doing all these things that have never been done in his sport. He would be the greatest of all time, even more than he already is. So we have a battle of history on our hands on top of what might be a legendary last playoff run for one of the best quarterbacks to ever suit up. Where do I put Brees in my all-time list? I'd have to take a closer look. Offhand, I'd say he's not in the top three, at least, and I'd probably say he's not in the top five. But you can make the argument, as we sat down and pored over stats here, for him cracking top 10. Definitely top 15, because I'm not putting him above Brady, as we just said. I'm not putting him above Montana. I would hesitate to put him above Manning. I don't think I would do that either. Obviously, Peyton, not Eli. My loyalties aside. Now look, I'm a little on the younger side, but I still wouldn't put him above a guy like even a Dan Marino. If he's not going to have those rings and all that things, I would tend to think Marino might be above him. I would tend to think Elway would probably be above him. Then you start to get into interesting calls to glow where you go. You compare him to his modern contemporaries. Would you put him above Rodgers? We're not talking arm talent. We're talking body of work. Well, we'd have to see how Rodgers finishes out. Would you put him above Favre? I don't know. I tend to think I would, but quite a bit of that has to do with the tail end where Favre just couldn't get over that hill either. And if they both can't get over the hill, Favre's got significantly more interceptions, significantly less accuracy, for my money. I don't know. Interesting question. We might have to discuss in the offseason if Drew Brees decides to hang it up. So, in summation, how far has this shaken my confidence? Meh. I'd still say I wouldn't be shocked to see them in the NFC Championship game. Wouldn't be shocked to see them in the Super Bowl, but if Brees misses four of these last seven games for them, I wouldn't be shocked to see them playing on Wild Card Weekend. Number three in the standout, seven. Seattle's up and down week, and we'll throw in a smidge of the Los Angeles Rams. So, last Sunday, I framed it on Saturday, rather, that I thought Seattle was going to make a statement. They were going to come out. They were going to win those two divisional games. This is their division, and they're going to walk, yeah? They're going to walk into the playoffs, do their thing. That was not the case. Russell Wilson, another two interceptions in that Sunday game. We talked about this on Saturday. He's forcing it. The running backs are hurt. The defense is not trustworthy. And you find yourself in a situation where your franchise quarterback, the best player on your team, arguably one of the best, if not the best offensive player in team history, is pressing. It's happened. It's happened before. And we saw in this one, as I kind of forecasted, Russell Wilson took a little bit on him, ran for 60 yards in this game. But the interceptions really set him back. They wind up losing this one by seven, and the pass rush and the defense for the Los Angeles Rams was just too much. A sack out of Michael Brockers, excuse me, two for Terrell Hall. You go all the way down there, and Leonard Floyd got involved in this game. Three sacks. Leonard Floyd, the guy that was supposed to be a monster for the Bears. Remember forgetting about him? I heard on Sports Talk Radio that the Rams defensive coordinator, who is new, by the way, they're not rocking with Wade Phillips anymore. It's Brandon Staley, right? 37-year-old Brandon Staley, who was hired this past offseason, was supposedly being courted for years by Sean McVay. Sean McVay knew this was the last piece he needed to bring this defense back together. And you take a look around, and there's not too much to impress you on the offensive end. And I like their pieces. We've discussed it before. I like Rob Woods. I think he's a really good number two. Cooper Kupp right now, I think, is a really good number two. I call him on times the decaf Adam Thielen. Josh Reynolds with a big game in this one. Do I think Josh Reynolds is fantastic? No, but he's a good piece. Cam Akers was their leading rusher with 38 yards. Not going to knock your socks off. Akers, Brown, and Henderson. None of them are going to knock your socks off, but you piece them together, you might be on to something. I remind you, not every Super Bowl champion needs to have a Deuce Staley-Jerome Bettis combo. You know, New York Giants riding Derek Ward, semi-journeyman, Ahmad Bradshaw, slightly above average, and Brandon Jacobs, power back, to a title. You know what I mean? You don't always need the big names for it to be a good running game and to be kind of something you can lean on when you need it. But nevertheless, I digress. So the Seahawks lose this game, which is massive, and they've lost all momentum. They're sitting in a tie with the Rams, and that is quite the predicament to be in. And then, oh, by the way, they just go out. Thursday night football, short rest, playing against the Cardinals, which won a huge game, all the momentum in the world after that Hail Mary. And they go out, and they hold Kyler Murray to 15 rushing yards. Russell Wilson goes back to his efficient self, 23-28, 197, two touches. One to DK, one to Tyler Lockett. Oh, by the way, Carlos Hyde decides, you know what, I'm going to show up this game, 14 for 79 and a touch. And a big, big, big player out of nowhere. Big, can't be that big on six carries, but remember Bo Scarborough? Does anybody remember Bo Scarborough? I do. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, born and bred. No? Doesn't ring any bells? The huge running back from Alabama? Who I thought could come in here and be your diet decaf Derrick Henry. He's not nearly as fast, but he's got the power, right? He doesn't need to be a lead back. He can be a change of pace. And Carlos Hyde isn't the fastest guy in the world either, but Bo Scarborough was bruising him up. And they go out and win the game, and they stem the momentum, and they stem the tide. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, 51 yards in this game. No Hail Mary in this one. No rusher over 30 yards for the Cardinals. And it was a solid win. It really was. 28-21 for the Seattle Seahawks. And it puts us in a weird situation where I have to discuss the NFC West, and I don't really know where to go. Rams undefeated at home. Seattle undefeated at home. Cardinals most balanced, 3-2, 3-2. Let's take a look at the records right now. 7-3 for Seattle, 6-3 for the Rams, 6-4 for the Cardinals. Who do the Cardinals have left, you're asking yourself? Okay, well, let's look it through. Couple of snoozers in here. Spoilers. They've got the New England Patriots, who I would classify at this point as a meh team. Then, intriguingly, and good for Seattle, if you're a Seattle fan, they've got the Rams, 4-5 from Arizona. Then they've got the Giants, snooze. Eagles, snooze. 49ers, week 16, could be trying to play spoiler. Might be able to find their way into it. I doubt it because of the injuries, but you never know. And they end week 17, oh, by the way, in L.A., playing the Rams. Who do the Rams have left? Well, other than those two games against the Cardinals, they have the Buccaneers on Monday Night Football this week, as we talked about before. They've got the 49ers sandwiched between this Bucs game and that first Cardinal game. It is what it is. Then they've got the Pats, the Jets, snooze. And oh, by the way, week 16, who do the Rams play? The Seahawks in Seattle. Seattle is in the catbird seat in this division. Seattle still has Philly, the Giants, the Jets, and the Washington football team. Oh, by the way, week 17, they have the 49ers. They have an easy 4 wins left in their schedule. You could argue 5. You could argue 6 if this team gets on track. They've allowed the most points in the division. They've scored the most points in the division. They're sitting at 7-3. I'm still riding on the Seattle bandwagon. I think this team is versatile on offense. I think they have a great quarterback, and I think the defense showed you a little bit. I talked about it 2 weeks ago, and then I kind of jumped off it a little bit. I backed off, but, you know, 2 weeks ago, and you don't jump off after one game, unless it's a playoff game. But I told you, I think this defense could pull just enough together. You don't have to be dominant. You just have to be decent enough to give Russ a chance. And that's what they did. Russ didn't play out of his mind, but it was enough to beat the Cardinals. And we'll see come week 16 if it's enough to bring home a division title. A lot of trap games in there, though. They got to be careful. New York football Giants, New York football Giants, Philadelphia Eagles, playing for something. Still playing for something, and we will discuss that in a bit. Next in my standout seven is that discussion. The obligatory NFC East jokes. Now, this comes after a barn burner, a phenomenal, exhilarating 27-17 New York football giant victory over the hapless Philadelphia Eagles, who are holding on to their first place with a tie. Now, this is hilarious to me. Wayne Gallman, 2 scores in that game. Intriguing. Daniel Jones, team's leading rusher. Darius Slayton, who whenever he seems to touch the ball, is just, he's big play Slay. He finds a way to make some plays. Evan Ingram was in the game, too. He played. You might not have noticed, but he did. On the other side of the ball, from Pennsylvania, Miles Sanders had a good game. Carson Wentz, not so much. 21-37, 208. Receiving corps still battered and bruised. I'm not really feeling this Eagles receiving corps, obviously. Sans Alshon Jeffrey. Even if you throw Jeffrey in there, I'm not feeling it. There are some pieces. I like Fulgham. I think Fulgham can be a player. But while we're here, and because we're obligated, let's look through the remaining games for all these teams. Now, mind you, the Giants have played 10. All the other teams have only played 9. And all these teams are alive, by the way. The New York football Giants right now sit at, I believe this would statistically be, what, a game and a half back? 3-5-1. Sure, a game and a half back with a game in hand. Washington, 2.5 back. Cowboys, 2.5 back. So right now, Philly staring down the gauntlet. Cleveland tomorrow, not feeling good about that one. Seattle, not feeling good about that one. Green Bay, not feeling good about that one. New Orleans, not feeling good about that one. Cardinals, oh no. Cowboys in Washington. So pie in the sky, you're looking at 6 wins. Maybe 7 if you get lucky. There's no chance this team breaks 500, right? Let's say they get to 5, they win those last 2 games. They're sitting at 5-10-1. New York football Giants remaining games. They're on the bye, so Giants fans celebrate. They are undefeated this week. They cannot lose. They play Cincinnati, which is a winnable game. They play Seattle, which is a very losable game. They play the Cardinals, which is a very losable game, though I'll remind you, they've played good teams competitive. They played the Buccaneers to a 2-point loss. They played the Steelers close for most of that game. They played the Rams relatively close, though. Nobody really thought they'd win that one. Then they played the Cleveland Browns, who, like I said, look, I remind you, 2008 post-New York Giants first Super Bowl. Who beat the New York Giants when they were undefeated in primetime? It was the Cleveland Browns. It was hilarious. It was Giants football at its finest, and by that I mean at its worst, which is its finest. So I remind you that I could see the Browns Brownsing this up. I've mentioned it in the open. The Browns do their thing. It is tradition, time-honored by the franchise since their return to the league. Could they win that game? Would I pick them to win that game? I'm not sure. I'd have to wait. It's 4 weeks away. Post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas. Then they play Baltimore, and Baltimore, that's a loss. Then they play Dallas. How many of these games would I confidently say the New York Giants can win? Two. The Dallas game at the end of the year and the Bengals game next week. But I would say the Cardinals and Browns games are significantly more of a toss-up than Philly's chances of beating Seattle, Green Bay, or the Saints. I also don't like Philly's chances as much against those Cardinals and Browns teams, which they both have. Browns tomorrow, Cardinals in a handful of weeks, because I don't like their playmakers. It's just not there. Carson Wentz has regressed tremendously. So we take a look at Washington. Mind you, 2.5 back as we sit. They play the Bengals, winnable. They play Dallas, winnable. Pittsburgh, no. San Francisco, winnable. Seattle, no. Carolina, winnable. Could they find, and they end at the Eagles, could they find their way to 7 wins? Look, I know it's a stretch, but you take a look at what this team has, you look at the little juice that they might get, a little juice from Alex Smith. He almost won them that game in Detroit. We didn't even talk this week, and I've talked about it ad nauseum, so I don't waste your guys' time. Matt Stafford is one of the most clutch quarterbacks to never win anything, and it bothers me. It bothers me. The guy had 20 seconds, and he found a way to win that game. Alex Smith throws for 390 yards, throwing a scary Terry and the bunch. Logan Thomas, former QB. Isaiah Wright, Cam Sims, Steven Sims Jr., no relation. I mean, leading back is Antonio Gibson, who's decent. Like, if they would have found a way to win that one, and they're sitting at 3-6, I would actually probably pick them to win the division as we sit. I'm confident in their chances against the Bengals. I'm confident in their Thanksgiving Day game in Dallas. I'm confident in this team against San Francisco to put up a fight. I don't know if they win that one. I'm confident in them against Philly. They could put up a fight against Carolina. Dallas right now, as we sit, has some softballs. 2-7. They've got Minnesota. Winnable. Toss, right? Their quarterback play is a big oopsie. It's up in the air without Dak. The offense has not really altered to the point where I think that, you know, feed Zeke. Their offensive line has tremendously taken a step back since a few years ago, obviously due to injuries and things like that. Then they've got Washington. They lose to Baltimore. They've got Cincinnati. They've got San Francisco. Then they've got Philly and the Giants. If Dak was there, Dallas has the inside route. If Andy Dalton was there, you could make the argument Dallas has the inside route, and we'll see how his battle with COVID and things like that go. But this division is a mockery. I would argue any of these teams getting to 8 wins would be a tremendous accomplishment for the NFL. It'd be fantastic. It'd be phenomenal. We're going to be looking at a below 500 division winner. It's just a fact of the matter at this point. It's a little sad. Speaking of sad, let's talk about the New York Jets. The New York Jets, as we sit right now, after throwing that game a few weeks ago, in which they were up 27-17 going into the fourth quarter, they're 0-9. They are in LA to face the Chargers this week. They might put up a fight. Then they've got Miami at home. Miami's still playing for something. Significantly better coach, you could argue at this point, at least on par or better quarterback play from Tua Tagovailoa. Much better skill position players. I give Miami the edge. The Raiders have been playing hard this year. They have them the following week. They have the edge. Seattle in Seattle, they have the edge. Rams in LA, they have the edge. Cleveland, will they be playing for something in Week 16? They have the edge. We could come down, and this is pie in the sky, to a Week 17 matchup in New England. We could come down to an 0-15 team taking on the first Patriots team to miss the playoffs in forever. That could happen, I remind you. Patriots, it's possible. They're at 4-5, so they might be playing for something here. How much would it mean to the Jet fan? Look, you're having a horrible year. You're not going anywhere. You might get a top pick. Maybe you get something good. Maybe you get a little spicy Trevor Lawrence soup. Maybe not. How much would it mean to the Jet fan to have your only win be in Week 17, making sure Bill Belichick misses the playoffs for the first time in forever? That would be massive. Massive. There'd be two-person celebrations, because we're not allowed large gatherings in New York. Not even Thanksgiving, as we mentioned earlier. But you're not allowed. But it'd be a two-person parade in everyone's driveway as they all synchronize, you know, their claps and play We Are the Champions. That would be hilarious. If I were handicapping this, I'd say right now I wouldn't put them at a projection of over one win. 1.5 would be a line which would get you great odds. If you bet over 1.5, a bookie should want to take your money hand over fist. The simple fact of the matter I wouldn't put it at 0.5 is because everyone wins a game, right? Usually. We've had two winless teams ever. Usually in the 0-16 era. Usually, everyone wins the game. Just the way it goes. Will it be against Miami? They might sneak one. Does Seattle drop the ball and not play hard? Does Cleveland it up? Does Justin Herbert throw three interceptions? Like, what happens? You could see it happening somehow. But it excites me that it's possible. Are the Jets actually going to go winless? 60-40, yes. Before we depart, obviously we usually talk about Sunday Night Football, but we did that already. We talked about the Ravens. Let's go Monday Night Football a little bit, and then we'll end with something on Drew Locke here. Monday Night Football game was Vikings-Bears, and for some reason the Vikings were favored. I thought I was picking an upset, but the Vikings win this one. Nick Foles throws for 106 yards in this game. And goes down towards the end, I believe. I remember him being carted off. Bart Scott blasts Nick Foles for crying over Monday Night Football injury. It was a boo-boo. Put a girdle on. Okay, whatever. Either way, I thought we were past these rude comments, man. What the heck? Anyway, this Vikings team has some talent, and that's why it always shocked me that they were so horrible. Who knows? Maybe they got a little bit of fight in them. I doubt it. Justin Jefferson played great, which has got to infuriate Eagles fans because, you know, Jalen Reagor, lol. But what are you going to do? Little glimpses of this Vikings team that was so good but couldn't win. And the Bears are back down the earth. I'm not going to waste too much time on this. The Bears have effectively blown any amount of momentum they had from early in the year. They are now down to 5-5. They have no chance of winning their division. They sit at 2.5 games out with 6 to play for them, 7 to play for Green Bay, and Green Bay, as we mentioned before, has a couple of games, I believe, in the NFC East. It is what it is. Number 7 in the standout 7, the Broncos reportedly not set on Drew Locke. And we take a look at the standings right now, and Broncos obviously having an awful year due to injuries. They're sitting at 3-6. They have a better record than a couple of teams here, so where's their pick going to be? I don't know. I came into the year expecting this team to be healthy, expecting a big next step from this offense, because I liked what I saw, to a certain extent, from Drew Locke last year. Drew Locke, I remind you, in 5 games in 2019, 4-1, 64% completion percentage, 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks, and he had a little bit of that swagger. But right now, it's looking like the swagger was kind of, like, why? Why did you have that swagger? Because we take a look at Drew Locke's game log from last season, and his game log from this season, and some of these are kind of, you know, they're a little squeaky, you know what I mean? They're not exactly the easiest W's you've ever seen. As we take a look through the games, we're going to notice right away that he's played in some real close ones here. And look, that's either a good thing or a bad thing. When you come out on top, obviously a good thing. But we talked about earlier in the year, there was a bit of one that came down to the bell. Last year, we see them beat the Chargers. I remember that one came down real late. I think that might have been a game-winning field goal. They get blown up by Kansas City. They beat Houston. Throws 3 touchdowns in that one. They beat Detroit by 10. He throws for 190 yards. They beat Oakland by 1 point. So a win's a win's a win's a win. But when I'm evaluating my future at the quarterback position, I can understand that not really knocking anyone's socks off. But you take a look at this year. You lose by 2 to Tennessee. You lose by 5 to Pittsburgh. Obviously, you get blown up by Kansas City. You barely beat the Chargers. That is your sneak-away win. You know, 2 touchdowns against Atlanta. And then it comes off a game against the Raiders where they throw 4 interceptions. He throws 4 interceptions, not they. And supposedly, the brass is like, you know what? Maybe we will look at replacing you because you're just not showing it to us. And you compare that to a guy like Sam Darnold, who really hasn't shown it to the Jets. Compare that to a guy like Danny Dimes, who, for my money, has shown a little bit, but he's still shown a penchant to turning the ball over. And coming out of the Eli Manning era, you'd think that's the last thing they'd want from their starting quarterback. It's intriguing to me. Do I buy it right now? No. I think it depends on how they end the season. However, it wouldn't shock me if they did make a little bit of a move. Wouldn't shock me one bit. Though, like I said, it would intrigue me to see what's going to be available. I don't know. What is going to be available? Because you figure they're not going to be top five, obviously, unless these NFC East teams really buy in, really, really, really buy in to trying to make the postseason. At least 2 of them are going to be in the top 10, possibly the top 5. The Jets are going to be in the top 5. As we just meander around and look at the bottom of the NFL here, the Jacksonville Jaguars probably going to be in the top 5. The Texans might be in there, though I believe their pick has moved on. I'm not 100% on that. Cincinnati might be in there at 2-6-1. And then we still have, you know, a couple of strong divisions, and then whoever loses the NFC South might be down there. Team of 3-6 is the Falcons, 3-7 and the Panthers. Might wind up down there. So what are you, if you're sitting at 8, are you confident you're sitting in the catbird seat at 8? I don't know. Is Trevor Lawrence coming out? How does that throw the first round into some kind of chaos? We'll see. Either way, that'll take us to the pick'em portion of this week's episode, the end of the standout 7, the beginning of the pick'em portion. And we're going to start with a snoozer, a 60-second pick if you're a throwback fan, and shout out to you if you are. Haven't done too many of those lately. 60-second pick to start it. The Pittsburgh Steelers head to Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars. Jaguars without tight end James O'Shaughnessy and wide receiver Laviska Shenault in this one. Gardner Minshew questionable with a right thumb. Will Gardner Minshew go in this one? It appears to be unclear. It appears he might be able to. The reports from a few weeks ago, multiple thumb fractures. They were considering benching him before, according to NFL.com. Will they just go with Luton? Luton didn't look great. I'm going to lean towards Luton being out there. And if Luton's out there, I'm going to lean towards an L for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Just in the interest of clarity, though, Pittsburgh injury report there without 2 running backs, Trey Edmonds with a hammy and Jalen Samuels with a quad, and linebacker Jarone Elliott. Pittsburgh probably going to go to 10-0. Massive trap game, but I'm thinking they're going to avoid it. Battle of the Jungle Animals next from Charlotte as the Detroit Lions head to Carolina to take on the Carolina Panthers. This one's interesting. Lions without Danny Amendola, without Kenny Golladay, without DeAndre Swift. Questionable, Matt Stafford. Vitae on the O-line. On the defensive side, Austin Bryant and Deshaun Hand on the D-line, and Jared Davis in the linebacking corps. Now, the Panthers, without Christian McCaffrey. Doubtful for them, however. Corner Dante Jackson, guard John Miller, and tackle Russell Okung. Teddy Bridgewater also listed as questionable. This one is intriguing to me because injuries be gone. I was considering the Panthers the worst team in this game, but without both Amendola and Golladay and DeAndre Swift, I feel obligated to pick against my instinct here. I'm going to take the Panthers. I'm not going to lie. I think Detroit, if all the players were on the field, is the better team. But with those injuries, and I do like what I saw from Detroit last week, like I said, pulling a victory out of the jaws of their own, throwing the game away. I do like that, but I don't think they'll be able to do it this week because I think they're a little undermanned. Our next 1 o'clock kick sounded great at the beginning of the year, and now it'll probably get no run on NFL Red Zone. The Houston Texans play host to the New England Patriots. Patriots have 74 guys listed as questionable. I'm not going to waste your time. Texans listing Michael Thomas, the safety, as out. Questionable. Their punter, Brian Anger, along with wide receiver Kenny Stills, tackle Laramie Tunsil, and a few others, along with Senio Calamity on the offensive line at guard. I'm going to take New England in this one, as weird as it sounds. Now, when I wrote down my picks, I thought to myself, okay, this is a game the Texans can win, right? But then you look at the records and you realize the pride involved in Bill Belichick not wanting to miss the playoffs in his first year post-Brady. No matter how bad they are, and they're not a good team, they are not. This is a game that could get away from them fast. Houston's got some people that could go deep. Obviously, that's their thing. But Deshaun Watson has a penchant for taking sacks now and again. He also occasionally throws the ball to the other football team. I don't know if this is an upset because they have the better record. I'm taking it as a favorite on the road. I'm not 100% on this, but, and this is probably the shakiest pick of the week. One of them. I don't know. We might be picking the Washington football team. So we're going to take New England on the road. It's a weird week, guys. Next, we've got the Tennessee Titans heading to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. They're back at the scene of the crime. The Titans without linebacker Jadeveon Clowney, wide receiver Adam Humphries, corner Adoree Jackson, tight end Michael Pruitt, and guard Roger Saffold, questionable center Ben Jones, and corner Kareem Orr. For the Ravens, doubtful D-tackle former Pro Bowler Calais Campbell, D-tackle Brandon Williams, linebacker LJ Fort, and Jimmy Smith, corner, are listed as questionable. This is a back-to-the-scene-of-the-crime thing, and for that reason and that reason only, I'm taking Baltimore. Baltimore is in a position where if they lose this game, you're not worrying about the division anymore, you're worrying about your playoff hopes, even with an expanded playoff. Moreover, Tennessee's kicking woes are horrible. They are back at the scene of the crime. Usually back at the scene of the crime games, you get a better punch from the team the second time around, in my opinion. And I think for that reason, Harbaugh's going to be able to get his boys up and tell them, look, guys, we got to get our mojo back here. Yeah, baby. And they're going to try and get into playoff mode. They're going to try and make a run. They're going to try and take down Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving. But first, they're going to beat Tennessee at home. Next, we've got an aforementioned should-be snoozer, but for the other reason, but here we are. Philadelphia Eagles head to Cleveland to take on the Browns. Philly without safety, Rudy Ford with a hammy. Cleveland listing two is questionable. Guard Wyatt Teller and linebacker Mack Wilson. I'm taking Cleveland. This is one of the only times I've ever had a 60-second pick where I'm picking the Browns, not against the Browns. Unless they were playing their backups, and I might take the backups. But here we are. I think Cleveland is in significantly better position than the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Philadelphia Eagles are hanging on by a thread in this NFC East. And I don't exactly think that they're the lead dog. They might be in first place right now, but I wouldn't give them the best odds of winning their division right now, as we discussed. And for that reason, I got to take Cleveland. Next, we've got an NFC South matchup between the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints from New Orleans. Josh Hill, the tight end, out with a concussion, and running back Dwayne Washington out with a back for New Orleans. Questionable Marshawn Lattimore with an abdomen. Falcons, no players listed per NFL.com. We are picking another shaky one here. I'm conflicted because I could see this being a really bad offensive game for New Orleans, or I could see them going completely dynamic and running some real funky stuff that they've always wanted to run but can't. My brain is telling me take Atlanta to make things messy, so I'm going to. But I just know that that's wrong. We're going to have a horrible record this week because we're picking all over the place. Mind you, we haven't had a below 500 week since week 4, and that is the only one all season we've been below 500, but we're really tempting fate here. But either way, we're going to take the Dirty Birds because I like their passing attack. I like Todd Gurley, and I think without Drew Brees, Saints fans are going to be like, I don't think Taysom Hill can drop back and be their lead quarterback every play. Jameis Winston, we've seen the turnover troubles. We know Jameis Winston, when he's on, when he's not going full Jameis and throwing the ball to the other team consistently, because he might be colorblind, Jameis Winston is an adequate NFL quarterback. I don't know if Taysom Hill is. We had this discussion in the offseason, one of our first offseason episodes, if anyone was going to throw a bunch of money at Taysom Hill to be their quarterback, and I thought somebody would take the bait, and no one did. So perhaps the NFL has seen the film on this guy, and while he's a wildcat quarterback, he's a slash, he's a Cordell Stewart type, they're not scared of him as an every-down quarterback. They're not willing to outbid New Orleans, and let's see if it comes back to bite New Orleans not going to Jameis. I think we might see Jameis in the second half. Our next game, the final game in our 1 o'clock window, is between the Cincinnati Bengals and Washington from Washington. Cincinnati without Joe Mixon once again. He's on the IR at this point. Questionable D-tackle Marcus Hunt. Offensive lineman Alex Redman on the inside and Fred Johnson on the outside. And wide receiver Mike Thomas, no relation, also out. Questionable for the Bengals. Washington going to be without DN Ryan Anderson, safety DeShazer Everett, tackle Cornelius Lucas, cool name, and linebacker Jared Norris. Questionable, their kicker with a right groin injury, two wide receivers, Dontrell Inman and Isaiah Wright. Now, this is Alex Smith at the helm, and they're in a situation where, like I said, they might have almost inside track to the division. As weird as it sounds, as disgraceful of a year as it has been for the formerly known as Redskins franchise, and Dan Snyder, and as hard as a year as it's been for all of us, and especially Ron Rivera, who's battling cancer, they're being led by the million-dollar man at quarterback, or the $7 million man, whatever the name of the show is, who had his leg put back together. Doesn't have the same mobility, but he threw for almost 400 yards last week. I'm intrigued to see how this goes against the Bengals. I'll say this. I'm going to take Cincinnati because, as much as I said before, I can see Washington winning these games. I'm not confident in their ability to win these games. I don't think Terry McLaurin can go off for 175 yards a game. I think they just don't have the depth of talent at skill positions that even Cincinnati has. I think Cincinnati, on the offensive side, is just a better team. As much as I like Alex Smith, and you know I'm rooting for him, it's not enough for me to put them down as my winner. So I'll take Cincinnati on the road. Next, we get into one of two 405 kicks. Two in the 405, two in the 425. As the New York Jets head to LA to take on the Chargers. Doubtful for this one, Blake Cashman with hamstrings. I reiterate, hamstrings injury. Sam Darnold, doubtful. The Jets give him a good shot to return in week 12. We are in week 11, so we might see a Flacco situation. Questionable for the Jets, corner Bleswan Austin. Bleswan? Nice name. And kicker Sam Ficken. A lot of kicker injuries. Questionable for the Chargers, long snapper Cole Mazza and backup quarterback Tyrod Taylor. I'm taking the Chargers. I'm not doing this. I'm not picking the Jets. The Jets winless streak does not end here. I won't let it happen. They got to send Darnold out there to get the win. You're not cheating and getting some former MVP, well, Super Bowl MVP-esque player to get this one for you. No, you are going to go out and try and get this win with Sam Darnold. Give me the Chargers at home. Next, we've got a weird one as Tua Tagovailoa leads the Dolphins 2 Mile High to take on the Denver Broncos. And this Broncos team is floundering. But it's a lot to do with injuries. Dolphins, questionable guard Solomon Kindley and linebacker Kyle Van Noy. Broncos without linebacker Joseph Jones. Questionable on here. Drew Locke with a rib injury, though I believe, latest I've heard is that he will go. Offensive line, Graham Glasgow on the inside, Jake Rogers on the outside. Tight end Noah Fant also with a rib injury. And corner Bryce Callahan. A lot of injuries. Miami's better than this Denver team. I'm not confident in Miami as a playoff team. I don't think they make a run. I think it's good for Tua that he's getting the experience. I think it's good for the franchise that he's getting the experience. I think they win this game and they stay in prime position to contend for a playoff spot at going to 7-3. But I think it has a lot to just do with the fact their defense has been forcing a lot of turnovers and actually even scoring for them now and again, along with the special team squad, including my boy Van Ginkle. Next, 425. This is a Tony Dorsett Bowl. It's a little before my time, but I think that's accurate. Dallas Cowboys head to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. Dallas without center Tyler Biadasz. Questionable DN Randy Gregory and DN DeMarcus Lawrence. Two pretty good pass rushers. Vikings without guard Ezra Cleveland. On the questionable list, corner Cameron Dantzler and tight end Irv Smith with a groin. Not confident in this Cowboy team in the slightest. Could be a game where Dalvin Cook kind of duels it out, playing some dueling banjos with Zeke Elliott. I'm going to take Dalvin, and I'm going to take Kirk Cousins, who's got this team in a weird spot, where all of a sudden, this Viking team at 4-5 might have a chance. If we have an expanded playoff, which it's already expanded to 7, if it goes to 8 teams, who knows where this goes. As we sit right now, by the way, one spot has to go to the NFC East winner, so we're looking at six teams. Seattle gets one of them, the Rams get two, Cardinals get three, Packers four, Saints five, Bucks six. So mind you, they're sitting at 4-5. The teams ahead of them, as I mentioned, 6-3, 6-4 range, kind of catchable as we go down the home stretch here. If they're going to catch them, which I don't think they will, but if they want to try to catch them, Minnesota's going to have to win this one, and I think they will. Our final 425 kick is another interesting one, as Green Bay heads to Indy to take on the Colts, one you don't see too often. Packers without running back Tyler Irvin, doubtful DN Montrevious Adams on the questionable list, a laundry list, three wide receivers, Alan Lazard, Darius Shepard, and Equanimeous St. Brown, the best name in the league. Two in the defensive secondary as well, listed as questionable for the Packers. Corner Kadar Holman and safety Will Redmond. The Colts, on the other hand, none listed as out, only questionable. Tight end and veteran Jack Doyle, tight end Noah Togai. On the O-line, tackle Braden Smith. On the defensive end, just two, Kamoko Touré on the D-line and Isaiah Rodgers in the secondary. Speaking of Rodgers, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to dominate this game. This feels like a game that Phil Rivers might be able to turn into a smidge of a shootout, but if Colts are going to win this one, they're going to have to play ball control, ball control, ball control, and hope for some stops. This one really rests on the Green Bay offense, in my opinion. How many points do they want to score? And I think for that reason, Green Bay is going to be able to bring this one home and continue to build that lead in the NFC North, continue to push towards a potential bye week. Our Sunday night game is an AFC West matchup, a rematch of the first division loss I believe Patrick Mahomes has ever had, as Kansas City heads to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders. Chiefs without Taco Charlton on the defensive end, and on the offensive line without tackle Mitchell Schwartz. Also, questionable tackle Mike Remmers and wide receiver Sammy Watkins. Raiders, questionable D-lineman Mo Hurst, big run-stuffing D-lineman, and scatback Jalen Richard. I'm taking the Chiefs. You're not beating the Chiefs twice in one season. I don't think the Raiders team is good enough to beat them twice in one season. Moreover, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is interested in losing twice to the same team in one season. Give me the Chiefs. It's that simple. You know, it's a real bold assertion that the defending champs are going to win a division game, but that's what I got to do. We're picking the risky ones early and taking the chalk late. Speaking of late, it doesn't get much later than Monday Night Football when the Los Angeles Rams head to Tampa Bay to take on the Buccaneers. So this Rams team, we've seen their defense really stepping up. We've seen the offensive role players kind of factoring in and out, doing their thing. But we've also seen Tom Brady kind of rounding into shape. Aside from a game where they got the bricks beat off them by the New Orleans Saints, they kind of just dropped 40 on the Panthers and he dropped 340 yards. They kind of dropped 40 on the Raiders earlier and he dropped 369 yards. Tommy's kind of there. He's much more there than he was last year. And I think for that reason, they're not going to be able to get to Tommy fast enough, because we've seen this Rams defense fight Tommy before. Tommy was able to bring home the ring, and I think this week, Tommy's able to bring home the W. That brings us to week 12. You know, obviously, we're not going to have an episode pre-Thanksgiving. I wish everyone a happy and a healthy Thanksgiving to you and your families. If you are going to be watching football, we'll pick these games for you. First game at 12:30 p.m., the Texans head to Detroit to take on the Lions. The Texans don't really have much to play for. As I've said ad nauseum, Detroit playing for Matt Patricia's job, potentially playing for Matt Stafford's future. And right now, I think, depending on the injury front, they might be the better team. Could be a fun one, though. Give me Detroit to win this one at home. Next, we've got Washington heading to Dallas to take on the Cowboys at the 4:30 time slot. I'm going to take Washington on the road. I think Dallas has thoroughly had the wheels fall off, and they might just continue to let it roll off, try to get a better draft pick, and hope that Dak is okay next year. Give me Washington. Finally, we have the biggest game of the week, probably including the Sunday kicks as well, though I will admit I haven't perused them super tightly yet. In the 8:20 slot, we have the Ravens taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is a game that if the Ravens want to compete in their division, and that's the narrative I'm pushing this episode. You know, when we do the Thursday night picks, you got to have some kind of a narrative thrust to make me interested, to push it through. And I think that the Baltimore Ravens win that game. I think the Baltimore Ravens are good enough to split with Pittsburgh this year, even if the game is in Heinz Field. The first game they played was close, and I think this game will be close as well. But I do think Lamar Jackson will start to appear again and get ready for a playoff run. You don't always have to be the MVP to win the Super Bowl. In fact, quite often, if you're the MVP, you don't win the Super Bowl. You just got to get hot at the right time, And pushing into Week 12, their 11th game of the year, that's the right time. Give me Baltimore on the road. And that will bring us, ladies and gentlemen, to the conclusion of this week's episode, as we push upon an hour here. Conclusion of episode, that's right, 90 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Join us again next Saturday afternoon for some more analysis. We'll talk Turkey Day football. We'll talk this week. We'll talk about the NFC least and whatever might come up. Thank you for joining us. If it was your first time, welcome aboard. If you're still sticking around, I appreciate you. Any comments on anything discussed, as usual, in the comment section, if there is one wherever you're listening to it, or on social media everywhere, at Nick Donatic. My name is in the description. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.